actually give a whole talk about treating our work like an athletic event. And when you see it that way, it doesn't mean you don't have fun. And I mean, having a shift drink and hanging with the people you just did battle with should never be taken away.
But I mean, what's wrong with like calling that out a little bit? It almost feels like our industry is growing up a little bit. And I know it's easy to hold on to, like, it's easy to hold on to what was and to really glorify it. And I liked the School of Hard Knocks. I liked how hard life was. I felt like I was doing something not a lot of people could handle. But it doesn't mean it needs to be the norm. And I think that to have that stuff challenged, I don't think is that awful.
This collection of the greatest athletes in battle, traveling from one end of the United States to the other, is what big time is all about.
Can you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds? You might learn something.
Welcome to Mama Food Pod, number one live digital audio industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner and award-winning chef, Chef Plum, and culinary veteran, star of the Food Saver commercial, Chef Jeff. So wrap, date, and rotate because the boys are about to set your Nissan claws. Here are the Good Brothers.
Yeah! What's up, friends? What's happening? Happy Thursday to you! As we're coming at you live here from the studio in the basement. And the boys are live on Skype with me, getting ready for another fantastic episode of Plum Love Foods Live. And I still kind of have remnants of my voice, Jeffy. It's not much left there.
Sound great.
You think so?
Sound buttery and smooth.
Oh, I don't know. I spent the past 3 days in Nashville at Ye Olde Honky Tonks, so... A lot of yelling, a lot of singing, and a lot of dancing as well, Jeffy. So, you know, and of course,
see any pictures of that?
It's out there. And of course, joined by the one and only Chef Dan. Dan, I got to tell you, I want to start this whole show off by talking about Nashville, brother. All I can tell you is there's nothing in my life I want more than to take you to a honky tonk.
Yes. You know it's gonna be a good time because I don't give a damn where we at. We're gonna have fun regardless.
It's gonna be fantastic.
Dance it up. Y'all dance it up.
You guys to know the second I got to Nashville, I opened the door, I walked into Nashville, and I beelined it for hot chicken. And I could have. What is this music? I'm not doing that.
Hot chicken.
Hot chicken.
That's hot chicken music.
I'm leaving on there. I beelined it for hot chicken. Now you may think, would you go to Hattie's? Would you go to the place where everybody goes now? That's Hattie's. Nope. I beelined it for the original, Jeffy, for the inventor of the hot chicken. I went to Prince's, Jeffy.
Prince's, that's where it's at, dog.
And I walked right up to that counter as confident as I've ever been acting. And I said, give me the triple X. As hot as you can make it, chicken wings. And they said, okay. She didn't bat an eye. And I said, what sides should I get with it? And she goes, it don't matter. It doesn't matter because you're not going to be able to taste it. So I did get some mac and cheese and beans with it.
Smart.
And they were delicious as well. But I got to tell you what. Prince's extra, extra, extra hot chicken is the way to go. It is delicious. It is an outer body experience. You know, we talk about in this program all the time. We judge the New York Hot Sauce Expo, a fantastic event run by our good friends over at High River Hot Sauces. And I'm not afraid of hot stuff, Jeffy, right? You would say that. Dan,
no,
would you say that?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
We run towards it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Love it. Delicious.
Prince's extra, extra, extra hot chicken is a whole new animal. It's not crazy hot right away. It's hot. But the heat builds and builds and builds and builds. And by the time I was on my third wing, boys, my lips had gone cold. And I kept hearing a goat. And there was no goats where I was at. But I heard a fucking goat.
What?
Yep. There was goats and my lips were cold. It was the strangest fucking emotion and feeling I've ever had. It was awesome. and all I could do is wish to go do it again. Because the chicken itself is delicious and moist and juicy and succulent and so much flavor and seasoned perfectly. And the heat just creeps on you, but it's not like an awful eating scorpion death anus fire peppers. It just creeps. Yeah, and it was amazing, but literally, I heard goats, and there was no goats in Prince's that day.
Mm-mm. You sure about that? None.
None. I didn't see any goats. I saw people.
You were in Nashville.
Yeah, it's true. But there were no goats, but I definitely heard some goats. It was an experience. I cannot wait to do it again. Also, went to see our friend Manit Chauhan and hung out with our buddy Tom over there and had a great dinner. Tom hung out with us all night Wednesday night. A lot of fun, man. Maybe some shit going on in the future for us down there. Tom's interested in having us come hang out some more. So, good times. Good times.
Love Tom.
Highly, highly recommend.
Manit's amazing.
Yeah. Highly recommend Nashville. Shout out to Chauhan, Ayla Masala House. Fantastic dinner. Fantastic food. Thank you, Manit. Thank you, Tom. It was delicious. Boys, we have a great show tonight. Jeffy, who's on our show here in a little bit?
Tonight we have the one and only
legendary
Brother Luck.
Oh,
legendary.
Good brother.
Brother
man.
Luck. Out in Colorado, running multiple restaurants, has a new book coming out soon, and just an all around good brother. Really excited to actually get to meet him.
Yeah, looking forward to hanging out with Brother Luck here in a few minutes. But we're gonna obviously have to do the break first and pay the bills and all those sort of things too. But I also, before we do that, I want to mention, if you didn't have a chance today, the NPR show Seasoned that I host, you can find it anywhere you get podcasts as well. It airs on the radio as well as podcasted. We had Bridget Lancaster on from Cooks Illustrated and Cooks Illustrated, right? I did. And
Bridget Lancaster.
What a great fucking episode. And America's Test Kitchen, too, of course. I'd be reluctant to mention that. She's been hosting the show. They got a new book out, America's Test Kitchen does. All the recipes from 2001 to 2022. It is a textbook. It is incredible. And Bridget is a fantastic conversation. If you're a chef, if you're a home cook, highly recommend you download and listen to that episode. There's a lot of cool information in there. And she talks about someone called in about looking for tips to get thyme off of, you know, stems, little thyme leaves, Jeffy. And
it is.
And I said, some of those little like stems that are bendy, you can eat those. You don't have to worry about taking those off. Don't get so crazy about that. And she goes, if you really want to get crazy with it, you can put those thyme stems, those thyme sprigs, in the freezer for a few minutes and let them start to freeze and take them out and tap them on the countertop and the leaves will fall off.
Get the fuck out of here.
I am like 100% trying that. That's what she said.
Yo, we cases of thyme we have to freaking pick through on a daily basis.
Ugh.
That is crazy. Oh, I'm doing it's that tomorrow. Consuming.
Yeah, got to give it
a
try.
I buy micro thyme because then you can just chop it. It's like better. For me, it's like way easier. It's delicious.
Well, I'm down for that. So, boys, why don't we take a step aside here for a couple of minutes, and when we come back, we'll be joined by the one, the only, and it feels weird to say good brother, but good brother, Brother Luck. So stay right there. We'll be right back right here on Plum Love Foods Live. It's Chef Jeff, Chef Dan, and Chef Plum. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Hang tight, friends. Oh yeah, Dave, Ergo Chef Knives, the knives used by so many culinary professionals, including all of us here on the program.
From the entry-level Prodigy series to the super sharp Shinzui made from Japanese V10 steel, Ergo Chef has something for everyone.
Hey, listen, every single day I use my Pro Series Santuco and I love it, man. You've seen my knife bag, haven't you? I mean, I've got like three of them in there. It's a great quality knife made by great quality people. And if my word's not enough, just ask guys like Myron Mixon, Guy Fieri, Michael Simon, and tons more.
Tell them you heard about them on Plum Love Foods by using promo code PLUM for a great discount on everything in your order. Knives so sharp, even the great city of Detroit approves.
Get some new gear at ErgoChef.com. Promo code PLUM, that's ErgoChef.com. Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Jeffy.
Hey, Plum.
Hey, Jeffy.
You know where good food starts?
Let me think for a minute. The microwave. No, that's not it.
That's definitely not.
In my brain. No.
Sometimes?
No, Jeffy. I think I might know. The Pantry, the number one gourmet specialty food shop in Fairfield, Connecticut. Was that a good guess?
That's a great guess.
Wait, here's more. I have some information for you about that place, Jeffy. Can I tell it to you?
Please, hit me up.
Their main goal is to provide customers with superior food choices along with the legendary customer service you expect in an upscale market. The Pantry, Dan, they have it all.
That's right, Chef. Award-winning pastries, spectacular prepared food choices, amazing deli and salad bar, specialty groceries.
What kind of specialty groceries, meats, Jeffy?
Mainstream specialty groceries, top quality meats, seafood, produce, and more.
Wow. How about that? And they're big friends, they're big friends of celebrating Pride, too, which is great. Hey, you know what sets the Pantry apart from the competition, Jeffy?
Yeah.
Well, great customer service, great food, and they're great employees. Don't forget to check out the take-home meals section as well. Try one of my favorites, the Duroc pork chops. They're next level.
The Pantry, 1580 Post Road in Fairfield, Connecticut. Good food starts here.
Nailed it. Coming back live right here on Plum the Food Live.
Yo, like shit. I feel like Duran Duran was playing our background.
It's like, just let it ride.
You guys are fucking amazing. That was incredible. Incredible live read.
Take notes, man. Take notes.
I was.
All right.
That's why I couldn't get to the mute button. But yeah.
I was trying to pull you in, Dan. I was trying to pull you in.
Y'all were handling it. I wasn't even ready. You guys were at it, going back and forth. It was like Abbott and Costello meets the dude from Johnny Carson and the dude he sits with.
Wow. Ed McMahon. Jeffy's Ed McMahon. McMahon.
Yeah. Jeffy's Ed McMahon.
How about that? Yes.
The dude that plays the guitar.
Wow. All right. Hey, that's a compliment there, Jeffy. Joining us now on the program is a human being who is one of the nicest people you're ever going to meet. I had the wonderful opportunity to hang out with him in Louisiana, as well as his mother, actually. And we had a fantastic time there. You can find him on Instagram at Chef Brother Luck and Chef Brother Luck on Facebook. Don't forget to check out chefbrotherluck.com and 4bybrotherluck.com as well. And don't forget luckydumplingco.com. Those are his restaurants. He's got a new book coming out. Pre-sale starts next week. This is his life story. I can't wait for you guys to hang out with this dude. He's one of my favorite people in the world. I always love talking to him. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program, Chef Brother Luck.
Yeah.
What's good, dude?
Hey, one day at a time, man. One day at a time.
I like it, man. Brother, I got to tell you, it's always a pleasure. I always love hanging out with you. I wish I got to do it more often. I think stars aligned properly with it. Was it one year? I think it was 2 years in a row we hung out, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the stars had just aligned properly, and then who knows what happened to that festival. It fell to the wayside like most of them have, but great times always to hang out and talk to you, man. You're such an insightful guy. You got so much going on, and so much has happened since the last time we hung out. Dude, talk about this book. Pre-sale start next week. Tell us about it. There he is. We lost you for a second, buddy.
Yeah, we, of course, you know, as soon as you try to get everything working, the mic stops working.
You sound great now.
Yeah. No, man, I'm doing well. You know, the book has been a process of really just getting feelings and emotions on paper, discovering story, really seeing the wounds that have kind of been festering underneath the surface, things that you hide in the closet, things that you're not ready to address, things that really attack you when you least expect it. And I think it's time for a book that kind of gets beyond the cool part of being a chef or the glamorous, you know, toxic lifestyle that we all celebrate. You know, we need to talk about the real stuff, the stuff that's affecting our people every day.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you tell a lot of your own personal stories in this book, right?
Yeah, you know, I think we all have an amazing story, right? Everybody has an amazing story. There's only one you when it comes to that recipe. Like, it can't be replicated no matter how much someone tries.
Right.
And the problem is that we shy away from embracing that because we think someone else's story is much more powerful or somebody else had it so much harder that, you know, we discount ourselves, right? But none of us belong on clearance. So, you know, for me, I think it's important to share my story because it's not about me reliving my story, reliving that pain, going through all those things. It's actually meant for somebody else to hear. So hopefully it encourages them to persevere beyond what they're struggling with.
None of us belong on clearance, man. I like that. That's good. That should be a shirt.
Hey, you know what I mean? You print it, I'll sell it.
I like that.
Talk a little bit about your own story, your personal story, and kind of, you know, some of those things that that you would write about in the book that we'll all see when it comes out.
Yeah, you know,
kind of your journey.
My story is loneliness, right? And I think a lot of us identify with that, whether it was neglect, it was abandonment, it was a divorce, it was a death, it was somebody made a choice, it was incarceration, whatever the case may be. A lot of us deal with loneliness, and that continues to follow you as you become an adult. I think too many people, especially in our generation, don't seek the help that's needed, right? We're not ready to talk about it. It's kind of like mind your business.
Right.
And we get that from our parents. So, you know, at some point, you know, I got to this point where it's like, I just can't no more. Right. And I'm not weak because I want to talk about my emotions or my feelings, but I'm ready to talk about them. You know, I'm not a kid no more. I'm not a little boy. And, you know, growing up in Cali and losing my father at 10 years old, my mother kind of being lost as a widow and a single mother, kind of got lost in her own journey. And, you know, the streets found me. And, that was the family I knew. That was the world I loved. That was the lifestyle I embraced and glamorized and followed. And luckily culinary kind of interceded, you know, restaurants saved my life. They took me off the streets. They gave me a different identity. You know, so many people ask me, they're like, you know, how'd you become a chef at such a young age? How'd you find your passion? You know, it's not that I found my passion. I had grown men tell me good job. And I was so thirsty for that attention, I kept doing it.
That's powerful, man. That's powerful right there. Food is a powerful thing, and it can do lots of great things, and food's gotten you where you are now. And I understand a lot of that story. It's a very similar situation here. First restaurant you started working in, what were you doing? Were you washing dishes? Were you working the fryers? What was it? Uh-oh, brother, we got you?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Repeat that.
What happened? You just leave for a minute?
Hey, you know what I mean, man? They sometimes just pull me left and right.
The first restaurant you worked in, man, what was it?
I was 14 years old. I worked in a restaurant called Wingers. No. Matter of fact, it was called Dry Gulch Steakhouse. And they needed a dishwasher, right? I was 14. You know, don't snitch on them, but I got paid under the table. And it was washing dishes. It was prepping salads. It was cleaning walk-ins. It was cash in my pocket. And all it took was one person not to show up. And next thing you know, you know, you dropping French fries, you dropping chicken wings,
yep.
You know, and then you see the pirate lifestyle, and you wanna be one of them, right? They wear bandanas, they got scars, they carry knives. Like, that's exciting, especially for a 14-year-old. Like, these are grown men who party hard, and you want to be respected, you want to be embraced, you want to be a part of something. So for me, it was kind of started there. By 16, I was working in a restaurant called Wingers. Lots of chicken wings, lots of hot sauce. And, man, it was like that movie Waiting. Like, that restaurant was ran by high school kids.
Right.
And, you know, and then you had like the college kids who had been there since high school, that still thought they were in high school. And then you had the old ass, you know, managers that they wanted to be young. And, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So that was wild. But, you know, around that time, that's when I got into a vocational school. I got into a culinary program when I was 16 in Phoenix, Arizona, and that program changed my life. I mean, it was a culinary program that's on a level of any college program, and it was a full hands-on immersive type program where they ran on-site restaurant that was open to the public and faculty. There was a full-blown catering program done out of it that benefited the P&L of the program. There was a bake shop. Everything was done from scratch. They had a private fine dining room. Every Friday, you had to wear the penguin suit and nice. Serve with the white gloves. Like, you're talking 16-year-old kids with cornrows. Like,
right.
You know, it was just a different world.
You'd never see anything like that.
Nah. And, it's, you know, everything was French. So it's like, you know, it's funny. I look back at my notes. I still got my notes from way back then. And I, like, look back and, like, how bad I spelt mirepoix and, you know, pinsage. all these terms, you know, you concasse. Like, I couldn't pronounce none of that stuff.
Like, there's an SH in there for some reason. I don't know why I put that there.
Yeah.
37 letters.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy, man. Hey, when you were writing the book and kind of reliving some of these stories in your brain and kind of just, you know, digging deep, I have to imagine it was kind of therapeutic for you.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, it was interesting. My wife recently, and her being just the most amazing person that she is and also business person that she is, she asked the question. She's like, what if the book sucks? What if it doesn't do what you want it to do? What if it doesn't move? Like, you know, my first reaction is kind of like, right? We don't think that way. But the second piece is, it was my response that kind of took some time for me to kind of sit on was, you know, at the end of the day, the self-discovery, the reflection, the connection to myself, the empowerment, the healing and the confidence that came out of this, but also the realization of where I can continue to work and how I can continue to help people like myself in my community and far beyond. That was worth all the money that I put up to do this book, right? Because I'm self-funding this thing, right? So I think that's a completely different thing. That's better than any bachelor's or master's degree I could have went to school and got.
Right.
To me, it's worth it.
Yeah, I gotta imagine it's a learning, almost like a class in yourself, just kind of coming to terms and, you know, feeling some of those things again, man. That's crazy. Well, dude, congratulations on that, man. That's really awesome. I'm glad you got a chance to do that, and I can't wait to pre-order it. It comes out next week, right? Amazon, or where are we pre-ordering at?
Yeah, it's gonna be on Amazon. It's gonna be on all the platforms, of course. We scheduled studio time to do the audiobook, so that's gonna be cool to go through. Do you
have somebody reading it, or are you gonna read it?
No, I'm gonna read it, man. It's my book.
Yeah. Hell yeah!
Can't nobody speak my voice.
Yeah.
All right.
I like that.
Well, good, man. Well, it's funny because your story did eventually lead you to doing some TV stuff, man. Top Chef 15 and 16, I mean, changed your life, I guess, huh?
Yeah. You know, Top Chef was Top Chef's crazy, man. And I think it's more than Top Chef, right? I think it's reality TV. And right now we're all a dime a dozen. Everybody's done Chopped. Everybody's done Bobby Flay, guys this, guys that.
That's why I didn't even bring it up.
Guys, the Suge Knight. Like, he's got a death row capture on the Food Network, on the food industry right now. Like, he's Suge Knight. Like, it's crazy.
His developmental fund over there. I have a project that's signed with his company, and their developmental fund is basically like all of Food Network's budget. It's crazy.
Yo, you gotta respect it, man. That man's the CEO. Like, I wonder who he hung off the balcony. You know what I mean? Like, who's the Vanilla Ice in the Food Network world? Like,
right.
I imagine this kind of stuff. Like,
damn,
he's too sweet. I can't see Guy hanging anybody off a balcony.
Guy's such a cool dude, man. I got much love for Guy. I've had the pleasure of working with him, and you know, it's, you got to respect it, man. These guys are CEOs, but I mean, it's even like going through Beat Bobby Flay. Like, it was cool to do the show. It was definitely cool to walk away with the win. But at the end of the day, what I walked away with was, this man owns Rock Shrimp Productions.
Mm-hmm.
This man rents a ballroom, creates a studio, hires a casting team. They do all the editing. They do all the film, all the production. He hires all the extras. He films two episodes a day for 2 weeks straight. and then he puts a bow on it and sells it to Food Network. Like, that's pimping.
That's every show on Food Network now, because Food Network doesn't create any of their own content. Our friend,
beautiful man.
Yeah, our really good friend Michelle Regussis is a judge on that show and really tight with Bobby. And it's an interesting one, man. I don't know. It's fun. It's fun. I didn't get to see your episode. You won though, huh? Awesome. Good job.
Oh yeah, I won.
What did
that?
I didn't.
Oh yeah.
What was the challenge?
You know, it's funny. It's a funny story. So they hit me up and they were like, "Hey, brother, what's your signature dish?" And I was like, "Oh, I got
fucking hate
dish.
That question."
And they're like, "Nah, we already did that episode. What else you got?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, I could do this dish." They're like, "No, I'm not feeling it." You can kind of like feel the opportunity slipping away.
Yep.
So I flipped it. Right. I'm outside the creative kind of box person, and I flipped it. And I was like, "What episode do you got that nobody else will do, or you can't get somebody to do?" And he was like, "Man, we've never asked somebody ask that question." He's like, "I'd love to do barbecue for 4th of July." And I was like, "Done." So he's like, "How are you going to pull off barbecue in 45 minutes? And I was like, "I don't know. I'll call you back tomorrow. I got to go buy a pressure cooker." So
yeah,
I did pulled pork sliders in 45 minutes and, you know, did it with a Southwestern flair intentionally just to kind of take away the edge of him being so signature in his style and in his presentation. You know, I wanted to level the playing field. So when the food came up, both of them had pineapples and cotija and cilantro. Like, let's square it up.
Right? That's awesome, man.
I love that.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. But
fuck yeah.
I want to, just that Top Chef, I want to talk about how that changes everything. Because Top Chef is, it's one of the few, like, weekly episodic type shows that are still out there. And those are the ones that kind of get you that household name. You know, when you do it, the one-offs like the Bobby Flay's and the Chop, those are one-offs. You do one, I mean, you're forgotten the next day. But when you do a show where you're on every week, it's tough. And it takes a lot away. I was on The Taste, and it takes away from your family, your time. Talk about how secluded you are when you're doing Top Chef and how you don't have a phone, and it's like supervised phone calls to the family. Talk about that a little bit. This is the part that people don't know about.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, when you're filming a show like Top Chef, it's usually about 6 weeks of filming, and it is a full sequester. So, you know, when you commit to the show, which is you committed, you made the decision, you've got to go through a process of auditioning. You got to go through a mental health evaluation. They do a psyche eval on you with a therapist.
Like, you pass that spectrum. Show?
Dude, I don't know how. you know, but you got to be straight up, and then you know, you get into your room and they show up in your room and they're like, "All right, give me all your electronics. Give me your phone, give me your computer, give me your iPad." They take it all. They take your wallet, your ID, your credit cards, everything. They take all your recipes, all your notes, everything. They go through your whole luggage, and then you're just kind of sitting in this room like, "All right." And then you wait. And eventually you end up on set with your knives and they give you a coat and, you know, you're walking on set for the first time being filmed and you get to see Padma and Tom and go through that whole experience of, you know, cooking straight up. Like, if you see 20 minutes on the clock, that's 20 minutes legit. Top Chef's crazy. For me, Top Chef hit a lot of things I didn't expect it to hit. You know, the notoriety's, I mean, they put a lot of dollars into marketing.
Yeah, big marketing.
So
budget.
Your name's going to be all over the place. And, you know, the longer you're on the show, the better. You know, for me, I think it helps more for a candidate who comes from a smaller market than someone who comes from a primary market like New York or Chicago or L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one cares in New York. No one cares in Chicago. Like, you're a dime a dozen. We got tons of celebrity chefs here.
Right.
But if you're coming from, like, you know, Colorado Springs, like I am, or you're coming from, you know, a small, like Kevin came from Idaho. You know what I mean? Like, you're
Idaho.
A hometown hero. You're a hometown hero. And I think that's something that's to be said because you're representing a market that doesn't normally get that kind of clout. So the longer you stay on the show, the more love you're going to get within your city. You know, for me, when I look at, like, Colorado Springs, like, it's almost 1 million people here. So I'm honored to be able to be, you know, their celebrity chef and you know, their brand ambassador, so to say. But what I didn't expect was Top Chef to trigger as many, many things that I had in my closet, right? Emotionally, the rejection, the failure, the seeking validation, the constant measurement of yourself to others, and the reflection in the aftermath.
It's almost, you know, like taking you back to when you were young, you know, 15, 16 years old, you know, getting that first restaurant job.
Yeah, and it hit me really hard the first season. And I came home, and I think any contestant who comes off Top Chef, especially after their first season, will be very honest with you. Coming off that first season is hard because you feel like a failure. You feel like you lost. You feel like you sacrificed so much and gave up so much time with your closest people, your friends, your family, your businesses, and you didn't do it. So
was it hard to acclimate back? I always talk about how hard it was to acclimate back into regular life.
You kind of feel like you just got out of jail.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, hey, can I go to the bathroom? You know what I mean? Like, you got to ask permission when you're on set because they don't want you to see what's going on set. So it's like, you know, people are escorting you to the restroom. You're like, I got to go 10-1. And that means I got to go to the bathroom.
10-1, 10-2.
Yeah, 10-2. So, you know, it's things like that. You know, so it takes a minute to acclimate, but, you know, for me, what was hardest was they asked me to come right back. So I went right into a second season without ever really processing what I went through. And the second season hit me extremely hard. I mean, I don't know if you ever watched it, but like I bowed out shortly after getting kicked off.
They wanted me to
stay and do more. Yeah, I was emotionally done. And, you know, I still had to go through a sequester. So, you know, they wanted me to stay the full 6 weeks after only being there for a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I went through in my hotel room, and obviously the book will touch more on it, but, you know, I tried to commit suicide while I was on the show.
Oh, my God, man.
And that's something that most people won't talk about or won't share. And I think that's something we need to continue talking about. And that's why I chose myself while I was on the show and said, I need to leave. You know, when I woke up that morning and forgot to die, there was a newscast still being displayed on my TV from the night before, and it was the morning Anthony Bourdain died.
Wow,
that was my Kentucky season, and like the reality and the shame of seeing that, and the connection of like what I was going through that night before, and what I tried to do, and what he succeeded at doing. Was my wake-up call. So it's one of the reasons why I said no to a lot of TV the last 4 years. Like, I don't have the desire to put myself in a position that I wasn't ready for, or, you know, that I would risk my mental health. So it's why I've become so vocal on that subject in my social media and, you know, and all my presence.
Hell yeah.
Man.
God bless you, bro. That's awesome. You should be vocal. We should all be more vocal about stuff like this, man. This is important.
What got you to that point? What was it that, was it just a buildup of all the stuff they put you through in there and just all of the media and all the attention? Was it the feeling that you just weren't doing good enough? What was it that got you to that point?
I think it was all the above, but, you know, especially it was where I was at in my own personal life. Right, the things I was running from, the things I was ignoring, the things I was using to numb the pain, those things weren't enough. And I think when you get to that moment of, you know, you're so lost in your own demons and you're so lost in your own insecurities and fears, there's a moment where you make a decision regardless of how it affects anybody else. Right, you're done.
Yeah, totally.
And a lot of people have been there. A lot of people have tried that. A lot of people have succeeded at that. I have a lot of friends that have you know, been through,
yeah,
you know, shit like that. And it's just one of those pieces that it's not my proudest moment, but it's also I'm meant to relive it for other people.
Right.
Right. Because you're not alone.
You're there to teach it. You and I spoke pretty heavily one night in I think it was in New Orleans. And we were at a bar, and you and I were speaking pretty heavily about motivation and what motivates. And we both kind of talked about our wives, and our wives being a very big motivating factor in taking us out of a dark place into a much brighter place, and a place to be able to, you know, succeed and be successful, because you have that motivating factor. I always say that if I didn't, I'd still be flipping burgers and chicken wings somewhere, just barely paying rent. But, you know, but my wife has made me a better person. I think you and I both talked a little bit about that. Being away on Top Chef, away from her like that, did that affect you a lot?
Absolutely, because she didn't, especially the second time. She told me not to go.
Wow.
Right? She knew what it did to me the first time. She already had the awareness that I didn't. I was chasing this premature, you know, idolization of being a top chef and proving to everyone, including myself, that I was good enough. And I still went. You know, I chose me over her, which mm-hmm. I'm so ashamed of. And I think when I got that immediate rejection of, you know, going through a crazy 72 hours, cooking through like 6 episodes straight of Last Chance Kitchen and getting put straight into the house, going through an elimination challenge and getting kicked right off, it broke me.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you go back and you see those interviews, man, it's hard for me to watch. Like, I finally watched one when I was writing the book, and you know, I can just see the pain, because, you know, 24 hours later I was trying to end it.
Wow, that's incredible. Jeez. Man, I'm so glad you failed at doing that. Thank you for sharing that. That's a really amazing story to share with us, man. I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Thank you.
No, absolutely, man. It's so many of us know that story, right? Whether it's personal or it's somebody close to us that went through that or succeeded at that, and there's no answers. Right. But I think it's important to talk about the mindset and the thoughts about the decision making in order to help somebody not make that same mistake. Right. Because you are loved. There's so many great things in this world. But when we feel alone, right, think about this. A predator will always try to isolate their prey. That way they can attack. Right. Because when you're by yourself, you're most vulnerable. We want to separate you from the pack. We want to separate you from the team. We want to separate you from the support systems. So when I can isolate you and I can get high ground, I'm going to pounce.
Right.
And I think the enemy is always going to do that. So we have to stand together. We have to talk about this so people know that I got your back, right? I'm not going nowhere. I don't care what you say, what's going on. I got your back. You're not alone. It's necessary.
That's awesome, man. That's really fantastic. And are you going to put some space on the website or something talking about this sort of thing and having people reach out? Or is there a plan to kind of do some work like that with it to help other chefs?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been, like I said, the last couple of years, I've been pretty heavy in that world. You know, here in Colorado, we have an organization called CHOW, which is Colorado Hospitality Outreach and Wellness. It's a support system for hospitality workers. To really let you know you're not alone. You know, we every week at one of my restaurants, we actually host a support group. They're all over the state in different cities. You can live stream in. You can literally log on to a Zoom, be anonymous, just listen. But that's an organization that I've found a lot of comfort in. I've been able to share and be vulnerable with them. Working with projects like Not 9 to 5, I love what they do. You know, these are hospitality workers who partnered with actual mental health therapists and creative workbooks, right, for you to not only recognize but deal with situations in the restaurant, and the workbooks are amazing. And then you see people like Patrick Mulvaney out in Sacramento with the I Got Your Back project, like suicide hotlines. This man, as you check into his restaurant, right, as you clock in, there's a measurement, right? How are you feeling? Is it a red? Is it a yellow? Is it a green? And just drop the ball in there, and then that's the topic of pre-shift. What's up?
Wow.
You know, it's just there's so many great things that are happening in our industry right now. We need to continue to push these. So for me, that's kind of a focus. You know, we've put a section in the back of the book with these resources, these contacts, and it's just what I continue to preach and talk about. I mean, I was just in Aspen for Food and Wine, and I sat on a panel with Kat Kinsman and Andrew Zimmerman and Paula, and we had this discussion on mental health. Like, look, we're all chefs. We're all here as personalities. It's a little overwhelming. There's a lot of media. Like, let's just have a 1 hour like mental health check-in. And it was so powerful to sit with all these, you know, personalities that, you know, everybody's done great stuff in their career and everybody has a name, but like, how you doing? What's up, man? Are you good? Like, let's be real.
Yeah, I like that. I like the how are you doing, how you feeling, you know, physically, mentally, all of those things. I think that's a great thing to ask. That's really fantastic, man. Dan, we haven't even plugged Brother at all since he's been talking so much, man. Getting real deep here.
Oh, man. I'm all in my emotions right now, let me tell you. Yeah, go catch our man, Chef Brother Luck. He's chefbrotherluck.com. 4byBrotherLuck.com is the restaurant. LuckyDumplingsCo.com is the other spot with the blazing dumplings. And then starting next week, yo, this book, No Luck's Given, Life is Hard, But There is Hope, going on pre-sale, Amazon. I'm copping me one. I'm copping everybody one. Yo, this shit is deep. Like, I understand 100% what you're talking about. I've been there. Actually, I just had my, I'm a veteran. I was at the veteran hospital. Last thing I got from the woman before I left was she gave me a card, and on her card was her name, her number, and on the back was the suicide hotline for specifically for veterans. Yeah. It's like super important that people understand, like, everywhere you go, you got to talk about it. You got to understand that it's out there and other people are dealing with it. And the more you talk about it, the more people are comfortable going, I am struggling, I am dealing with stuff, and people will come out there and talk. And so this is huge. Like, coming out like this is amazing.
Yeah, it's so real, man. And for one, thank you for your service. Living here in Colorado Springs, we're a heavy military community, right? We've got Air Force Academy, we've got Peterson, we've got Fort Carson, we got NORAD here, we got Space Command here. Like, this is a heavy military community. My brother was a 92 Golf. So one of the 92 Golf, just to clarify for those that don't know, is a culinary specialist, right? These are the people preparing our food in the dining facilities or the D-packs. You know, I mean, when I talk to my brother's kind of lost in his own path right now, right? He's a vet who, was hurt, was addicted to opiates when he was cut off by the VA. Now you're addicted to street drugs and he's just lost right now. He don't want to hear nothing I got to say. And that's fair. I'm the older brother. Most younger brothers don't want to hear what their siblings got to say. But what we've done is I've actually created a program called Bridge the Gap. So I actually take the 92 Golfs mainly from Santa Cruz Special Forces, and I bring them into my restaurants for 45-day rotations to not only make them better cooks, but make them better leaders and find some self-awareness as to what they can do in this industry, whether they decide to stay in the military or after the military. So we've had these amazing discussions and found so many similarities between, you know, the military lifestyle and the hospitality industry, right? Because it's a brigade. You know, the difference is a soldier has, you know, real life on the line. And we want these cooks to understand that when they go back to the defects, like, you are possibly serving someone's last meal. Like, take this shit serious.
Wow, let's go, brother. That's fucking woo. Awesome, man.
Man, dropping gems tonight.
Serious respect for that. That's really incredible. We had the opportunity to go, all of us. You know, we've kind of formed our own little group, the Good Brothers. It's a bunch of chefs that we all kind of work together to help each other out and do whatever needs to be done and just look after each other. And it's been phenomenal, especially through the pandemic and whatnot. But we also banded together and went to the sub base here in New London in Connecticut, and went and cooked for 700 sailors together with our friends from Big Green Egg, gave some green eggs for the sailors to use. And it was a pretty awesome experience to go hang out with them, but we didn't just go cook for them, brother. We actually went there and cooked with them. So we, you know, worked with what stuff that they had and just made, show them techniques that we would use. And what an amazing experience, man. So much respect for what you're doing there.
Nah, it's so rewarding. You know, we had during the pandemic, I got a call from one of the leaders over at 10th Group, and he was like, hey, you know, everybody's got COVID, and we normally do Thanksgiving for all the soldiers who are still on post. So, is there any way you can come down and help? So we got three chefs together, and we drove down to Fort Carson, and we went into the DFAC, and we sat there and prepared, you know, this huge meal. And it's interesting because, like, you know, my background before independent restaurants was large volume hotel production.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm a dope banquet chef. Like, I can handle volume no problem.
Come on now.
And, yeah. Shout out to all my hotel chefs. And, you know, I started kind of watching, and I'm like watching these guys do their thing. And then at some point I was like, look, man, y'all step back. I'm going to pull these carts out. Here's the production sheets. We're going to knock this out. And I started teaching them how to really use the tilt skillets and,
nice.
You know, their steam kettles and the combi ovens. And I'm like, look, we ain't going to be here till 3 a.m. like you guys originally thought. We're going to be here by 9. And, but that's what it's about, man. It's like, you know, restaurants need to restore. We got to restore the communities, whichever community you are a part of. That's what you got
to
focus on.
Hey, that happens to you ever again, they call you, you call the Good Brothers. We'll be there the next day to come help.
Absolutely.
We'll be right there. That's awesome shit, man. Let's talk a little food for a minute, man. Let's talk some food. Let's talk some fucking Lucky Dumpling. Let's talk a little bit of the restaurants, man. How are they doing? How has things been through the pandemic? What's the story?
Yeah, restaurants are hard, man. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
then you throw the pandemic on top of it. It really took to get through that. It took a decision, right? Are you going to lay down? Or are you going to fight? For me, it was exactly that second choice. I'm going to fight. I'm always going to fight. That's my life. And I fought because I didn't want to give up on something I worked so hard to build. Right? I don't have partners. I don't have investors. I don't got all this big money behind me. Like, it's me and my wife and our house on the line every day. And I take my family, my employees very seriously. So to have to shut down because of something I didn't do was hard. And then I have to tell my staff, yo, I don't have a plan and I don't have any work right now was probably the most
goddamn hard.
It was one of the toughest things I ever went through. You know, I was 50 employees. And within 3 weeks, man, we were up and running. And, you know, we had figured out curbside service really quick at Lucky Dumpling because it worked. And I got creative. I thought outside the box. So, you know, what we transitioned to during that time was actually building cooking kits and selling bottles of wine. So guests would show up at in the parking spots. Our staff would walk outside, drop the cooking kits off, give them the recipe cards. You know, my staff worked because they had to build all these kits every day. And then I would go home with the kit, and Tina and I would go live on Facebook, and we would cook at home, and people would cook along with us. And I mean, it was crazy because we were selling like, you know, 100 kits a night.
Wow.
And you know what I mean? It was like, Four is an upscale restaurant and it's not meant for curbside. So we had to find a way that made sense. So it's how we kept our staff working most of that time. In addition to feeding frontline workers, in addition to, you know, making sure kids were fed, in addition to all the crazy stuff that we were doing. And it's a trip now because when I look at it, like, Lucky Dumpling expanded 3 times during the pandemic.
Holy shit.
Like, I know. It's a trip. Like, it's weird to say that out loud now because it didn't feel like that, right? All the debt and all the fear and everything that we had on our necks at that time, all that pressure. The bar shut down next door to us. So we absorbed that space. We expanded into their bar. As soon as I had that lease, I was able to zone the patio outside in front of it all, get the liquor license pushed through pretty quick because of the pandemic. We got a permanent zone on it.
Wow.
We put 100 seats out there, and then the space above us went out of business. So we took over that space and created a private cooking studio so we could host underground dinners. And you know, that space seats 24 people with a live kitchen and a live bar. So, you know, it's a trip now that, you know, Lucky Dumpling has tripled in size because of the pandemic, and Four's, you know, thriving right now. So it's a blessing. But it was a timeout that was needed, right? Because I was so caught up in that whole chase the celebrity nonsense of, I feel like I need to be on a plane flying somewhere every weekend to look like I'm busy and doing something. That, you know, I was being disconnected to my staff. I was being disconnected to my restaurants. And that pause button was everything I needed personally and professionally.
Dude, the fact you could recognize that's incredible. Good for you, man. I'm so happy to hear that. That's awesome. And damn, I mean, and now the place is just packed, right?
you know, it's a blessing, man. I'm honored. Like, I sat in my restaurant Saturday night with a good friend of mine, and, you know, we're sitting there talking, and I'm sitting there with him and his wife and their little daughter, and I'm just kind of looking around at something you thought of, you created. I mean, it's been 10 years since I started everything. So,
is it really?
You know, to start with a $500 handshake in the back of a punk rock bar, and, you know, now we've got two locations with three concepts. Like, it's wild.
Fucking American dream, bro. That's what that is right there. I could talk to you all night, man. I feel like there's so much stuff to cover here. But, Jeffy, I've been running my mouth enough. I know you got something for brother.
Yeah, actually, I mean, there's a couple things. I wanted to go back to when you were talking about, you know, you said the streets had found you, and then you found cooking, and you found, like, your first job. And you mentioned, like, there was a bunch of pirates. Like, do you think that it was easy transitioning from, like, kind of like street bullshit life to kind of like kitchen life, because they were kind of the same kind of degenerate crowd? I mean, that's what I found for myself. I just wondered if you kind of had that, like a similar experience.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, kitchens don't care about who your parents are. They don't care about your education. They don't care about your story. They care about respect.
Don't care if you're black, white, red, purple, gay, straight. Kitchen don't matter.
It don't matter. Right?
Can you get the work done? Can you hold your head up? Yeah.
Exactly. And you got to earn that respect. And yeah, at least our generation, that was the mantra. And I think for me, transitioning from, you know, a very urban environment and in the Bay Area to kitchens was pretty easy, because it's like, you know, you mind your business. You don't run your mouth. You don't draw attention to yourself, and you hustle, and you hustle hard. And, you know, as you hustle and you grind, you pay attention. As you pay attention, you take notes. And when you take notes, you start eating fools alive. And, you know, that's how you take a corner.
Oh, yeah.
Or a station, for that matter.
Yeah.
Because I took everybody's station. I'm taking Saute. I'm taking Grill. I'm taking Expo. I'm taking Sous Chef. Like, y'all are all victims in my way.
I love how you look at that.
Always as a cook.
Damn.
You know.
People don't look at it like that anymore, man, and they should, you know?
Well, kitchens are big.
But, you know, I mean, I got a young kid who works for me right now. The kid just did 5 years in prison. Like, he shot three people at age 15, and he's 20 years old.
Damn.
And he's in a halfway house right now. He's an amazing young man. He wants to be a chef, and, you know, I'm very fortunate to call myself his mentor. But I had to pull his leg the other day, and I was like, look, man, you have to see the similarities of the street game versus the restaurant or corporate, for that matter. Like, I literally have a corner in downtown Colorado Springs, and I'm serving product, and I got muscle, and I got good marketing, and I'm legal.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same
thing,
you know,
man.
I mean?
Wow. Same thing.
So,
legal hustle.
Get your hustle up. That's what I always tell people, man.
Yeah, but they don't get it, right?
Sales is sales.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, there's some great CEOs that are running many corners and many urban areas across our country. And, you know, sadly, they don't get the opportunities to be able to use that mindset to not only better themselves, but better their neighborhoods.
Wow.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Fantastic. Jeffy, I didn't expect that. That was awesome.
Yeah, real good. You're one of my favorite guests this year so far, brother. Luck. You're really slapping, man. We're dropping some jewels on fools. This is beautiful.
I tell you, bro. I get deep, man. You need a scuba suit to swim with me.
I'm with it.
That's awesome, man.
So we had Shay on the other day. Get some scuba gear. We're all set.
That's right. Dan, throw those plugs out for brother one more time before we get him out of here.
Absolutely. Chef Brother Luck. ChefBrotherLuck.com. 4byBrotherLuck.com and LuckyDumplingCo.com. Check them out on IG at Chef Brother Luck and on Facebook.
Brother, if I find out you're back in New York at some point, you don't call me, and we're going to have a problem. I'm going to come take your corner.
Hey, man, you know, I mean, that's cool and all, but I want to go to Nashville, which, you know, that's like my favorite spot, man.
Let me tell you something right now.
I get down with the honky tonks. When I went last time, I went to the hood. And I went to the original Prince's Chicken. Like, yeah. I'm talking like Big Uncle with the Jerry Curl and the 60.
Oh, yeah. TV Auntie's
in
there.
Security outfit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, looking like Jerome from Martin. Like,
yo.
Roman Rome. like, you know, and it's like, you know, I remember I walked up and I was like, it's probably like 11 o'clock. And I was like, oh, I want a whole fried chicken, you know, and they do everything cast iron. So she said, oh, baby, that'd be 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, hold on, wait. How long? People sleeping in there, like, you know.
Jesus.
The chicken was hella good. It was so good, man. But you know what? The next day, I was at the honky tonk, man. My, you know, the whole story of the hot chicken where she tried to hurt her man.
Yeah, because, she tried to hurt him. Yeah, yeah. Him. He liked it, yeah, more.
Because he was cheating on her and he liked it, man. Yep. I'm not that dude. Because my feeling hurt so bad the next day. I was in the honky tonk. I caught an Uber back to the hotel. I was like, I'm done, yo. Like, my stomach hurts so bad.
Yo,
but man. It's so good. So,
dude, I heard, you know, goats.
Shout out to,
there was no goats around, but I heard goats.
Man, I'm telling you, my ears were ringing. Like, it was so hot. Like, there ain't enough white. They can't give you enough white bread in the world. Mm-mm. Like, they give you that big old loaf of bread. It's, yeah.
On the menu part where the sides are, it's like pickles, $3. This, $2. Yeah. One more slice of white bread, $50.
Yep. For real. It's so hot.
Dude, I did it.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course, I rock with Monique, man. I love all her restaurants. I was just with her and Vivek in Aspen.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite people.
I love her restaurant. She's so amazing. Like, man, she is a wild one, and her husband is like the most genuine person. They're such good business owners and such great chefs. And I love getting out. I get out to Nashville pretty often.
Bro, it was my first time, and it was amazing. And I was telling the boys, they got to come out. I think we're going to go do a guest chef spot with Tom and Manit. Probably in the fall. I'm excited. We've been talking about it. He was down. He wants to do it. So we're going to go down there and hang out. But
let me know, man.
You want to come through?
I'd be honored. Yeah, I'll come through. I'll find some books, and I'd be honored to cook with y'all. Monique kicked me off Chopped, so I'll never let her live it down.
Damn.
She is the best, man. We hang every year at this festival. You know what?
I made her chutney. And on the show, and I was like, man, I'm so nervous about serving Monique chutney.
You should be.
And she gave me hell yeah, right? She gave me some love, man. She was like, man, this is delicious. And I was like, see?
She's very nice, but she's also, I mean, she, to make no mistake, she is a G in the kitchen.
She is super dope, man. And she got the dance moves too, man. They tore up the top of the mountain party in Aspen this year.
Did
and,
they?
Man, I don't know. Oh, my goodness. There was like half naked people on top of the tables, and there was chairs being hoisted, and man, it turned into a full blown awesome party. Like, yeah, but she was the ringleader.
Oh, that's hysterical. We joke about it all the time. This one festival here we do with Mohegan Sun, and we talk about it here all the time. And in the kitchen, it's always, you know, our group and Manit, and we're always first. And Manit's in there making the food. I'm in there making the food, and the boys are with me. And this year I watched so much because it made me host the stage now. But it's really fun, man. And when we do that, we get that shit scheduled, I'm going to reach out to you. It'll be really fun to hang out again and go to a fucking...
Yeah, man. I'm
We got to take Dan to a honky tonk, though.
Hey, I'm telling you, there is nothing. I did a chef's indie dinner out there. And, you know, there were like 24 of us that came for that dinner. And I was like, look, y'all, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to honky tonk all night. And I'm going to stumble in here tomorrow, and I'll get my work done. But I'm going hard. Like, we're going to be two-stepping the night away.
Oh.
Like, and they thought I was joking, you know, because, like, I'm from the hood, and I'm, like, 6'2", 260. Like,
right.
They was,
get it.
They didn't know what to do with me.
Bro, but I was telling Dan and Jeff both, man, every musician is good. They're all so fucking, all of them. Anywhere you go, they're awesome.
Music is phenomenal. It's so like bad. Austin and Vegas, man. It's crazy. Dude, like, Broadway's a trip. And you know what? Plug for Broadway Uncensored on Instagram, because that is the best Instagram. Like, people get so faded. Yo. And they just record them and post them, bro. Like, it's so funny.
Dude, that's awesome. I'm going to send you a picture right now, actually. One of the best pictures I took when I was there. But it's awesome. Yo, Nudies is my joint. Nudies is the shit.
Yeah.
Big fan of that place. Big fan of you know whose place is awesome? It's fucking Luke Bryan's place. That place is dope.
That's a cool one too. I definitely enjoyed it. Yeah, and I always like to sneak away because Beat Bobby Flay with had a spot down there. So, you know, I would always sneak away to go hang out there. So when we were filming at Top Chef Kentucky,
I got to actually sneak out to Nashville and go hang out with all them. So it was a good
time.
That's
awesome. Yeah, when this picture comes through, brother, zoom in on the trash can, man. Brother, I cannot thank you enough for coming on here and sharing everything you shared tonight. I was not prepared to go that deep. I thought for sure it'd be talking about dick jokes and terrible stories, but this was a real, real treat hearing you tell these stories, my friend.
Nah, absolutely, man. It's a blessing to be here, and you know, we just need people to know they're not alone, man. We all going through it, and we can survive and we can thrive if we band together.
Abso-fucking-lutely. I love it, man. Brother, we appreciate you. I look forward to chatting with you on down the road. Dan, anything last for brother before we get him out of here?
Real quick, shout out. I am a former 92 Golf Army veteran. I have a very good friend of mine who is like suffering with all the same things you're talking about with your brother. So that also hit me on another level. Like, yo, that's big that you're taking these kids. And because that's the one thing about a 92 Golf is like you could take that and learn it and take it to another level and be more than, you know, just a injured veteran. And I think that's beautiful, man. And I really appreciate that.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Appreciate that.
Brother, we will be in touch soon, my friend. Best of luck to you. Hey, do me a favor. Tell your mama say hello.
Hey, always, bro. You know she wild. She probably partying right now.
your mama's fucking wild, dude. Can we? Mama, we gotta do it for a minute. Play, I don't know. Bro. I'll tell the story on the after part on the dive bar on Instagram. I don't know if you ever heard that shit. And brother, if you're around, you're welcome
my
to join us too.
My mama's a G.
Yo,
she's a G, bro.
Mama luck is no joke.
We got stories, but that's her hometown, you know. She's my mom's from New Orleans, so
yeah, no doubt.
She was tearing it up while we was out there.
We were like, where we're gonna follow her, let's go. Don't forget, everybody,
lasted all of us.
No shit. Brother's book goes on pre-sale next week. You can get it through Amazon. It's probably the easiest way. Information also on his website as well, I'm sure, if you want. And don't forget, you can get that info on Instagram and all the social media points. But the best way, catch it on Amazon. Easiest way to do it, man, for sure. Brother Luck, you are the man, my friend. We appreciate you so, so much. Thank you for sharing all those stories, and we look forward to seeing you down the road.
No, absolutely. Shout out to Marcus Samuelson for writing Forward, man. Drop that gem right there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just drop that gem real quick.
Awesome. That is awesome. One of the best interviews I had was with him ever. He was a fucking great human being.
Yeah. Wow. He's a great dude, man.
How about that? Well, listen, brother, we appreciate you, and we'll see you on down the road, my friend.
All right, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brother Luck. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
There he goes, friends. One and only Chef Brother Luck. That went a whole different direction than I was prepared for, but I was excited to do it.
Absolutely.
Dan, I think he hit some spots with you there. I could feel it.
Yeah. I mean, I've struggled with my fair share of mental illness. I've struggled with my fair share of whether I want to be here or not. So, yo, he hit me on every level. Then shout out to 92 Golfs. Like, man, he was hitting me in my emotions. I was tearing up for a few minutes. Yeah. Yo, that was deep. That was great.
I'm telling you, he's one of the coolest human beings you'll ever hang out with. He is so fucking cool. He's so easy. He's so chill. Good dude. And can cook his ass off.
Hell yeah.
Jeffy, what'd you think, man?
Yeah. Listen, it hit a lot of things for me. I appreciate his backstory and how the kitchen kind of like made him the person he is today. And then just how honest and open he was. I mean, I never heard anyone talk like that about Top Chef. Yeah. So like, just hearing that story, it's just so real. Because I bet it's not a single story. I bet there's a lot of people who've experienced stuff like that coming off those shows. You know, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of stuff you put on yourself. And like, just us as chefs in general, we internalize so much of I don't know what I want to. You know, like you make a plan and you kind of want to stick to it. You know, as chefs, we always kind of do that. And when it doesn't work out, you know, on that kind of a level, I'm sure there's so much that goes into it. So, I mean,
I talk about it a lot. When I got off the taste and came back home after being away, it was weird. It took a while to adjust back to being normal. It's weird. It's hard to explain because you become a different person. Like, I had to become a different person to get through that experience.
And, I bet.
To change back, it was strange, and you know, it's all about finding that motivation. So We appreciate Brother Luck's story, and I'm so, so happy he shared that here on the program with us, man. That was incredible. We love you, brother. Thank you for doing that, man. Seriously, we really do.
Thank you.
We have a dive bar we have to get to.
Dive bar.
That's your chance to plug, Dan.
Yes, the dive bar. Catch us on IG Live, Plum Love Foods. Come check us out. We're going to talk about, we're going to recap this amazing show where we talked about a lot of deep issues. And Brother Luck, man, I can't wait. This is going to be a good time.
Dude, really enjoyed this program tonight. If you haven't done so yet, make sure you download Season from today. And next week's show, friends, we've got a big one for you for the July 4th. Happy birthday, America. Jeffy, who's on the program next week?
Rocco DeSpirito.
Oh, hell yeah. Good brother Rocco DeSpirito is going to be joining us next week. Love that guy. Great conversation with him. It is pre-recorded. We did pre-record it. We're not going to hide it because we're going to take that week off for the holiday. But we're not going to leave you with not new content here on Plum Love Foods Live. That's what we do. We're the content kings. Tell them, Jeffy.
Never. We never leave you without content. Every Thursday, no matter what we have to do, we will bring you the fucking noise.
That's it. You better understand the noise is coming your way here from Plum Love Foods Live. Tell them, Dan.
Sound of goats.
The dive bar starts in about 5 minutes. Join us on Instagram for Chef Dan, for Chef Jeffy. I'm Chef Plum. Friends, remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Let's make sure we get the time it deserves. Happy 4th of July. Shout out to Brother Luck. We'll see you next week.
The power, too sweet to be sour. I'm funky like a monkey. Sky's the limit and space is the place.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.